Hello, you're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but our love for dumb movies most definitely isn't. This is episode 130. I am one of your hosts, Anne, and with me as always is my co-host and husband, Marcus. You like how I said that?
Yes.
Special emphasis on husband.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Hello. Well, before we get into any fun stuff, just a brief note, we have been on a little bit of a break. I unfortunately had sad life news. My father wasn't doing very well in July, and we did actually go up to visit him and my mom, but he passed away not unexpectedly. So, you know, it's been a long time coming between him having cancer and dementia. But even though we knew it would come sometime, we didn't know, you know, that it was going to happen when it did, and it's always hard to lose someone close to you like that. So, yeah, hadn't really been in the mood to record the podcast. I'm doing fine, and Marcus and his family have been very supportive, as have everyone else that knows about it in my life. So I'm doing all right. But just a little note there that that's why we've been delayed. But yeah, now for a transition. I don't know how to transition from that, but we've got a lot to catch up on today in terms of stuff we've been up to and watching and playing, and not really any news. We'll kind of do a real brief mini news section, very mini, but we can talk about what we've gotten up to since our last episode, which is probably about a month ago now, yeah. Don't you think? Yeah. We've been up to a lot, including my first workshop. So that was in July, and I held a plushie taxidermy workshop. Plushie taxidermy is one of my most popular products that I'm selling at markets. And I saw actually online, you know, just like I did, I'm not the originator of the plushie taxidermy idea. I'm also not the originator of doing workshops for it. I saw online that people were doing workshops, and it looks like a really cute idea. You know, you bring all of your supplies and your know-how, and show others how to make their own. So we organized that and had it, and we had, what, 13 people
13
show up?
13 people, yes.
Yeah, so that's pretty good, I would say, for my first workshop, including some family and friends, but, you know, we'll count them. They still came out to support, and it was a lot of fun seeing everyone make things, and, like, people really got creative. I was kind of surprised at how quickly everyone was just, like, going for it. Like, they had ideas they wanted to execute. They grabbed stuff. They started making things. It wasn't really anyone, like, humming and hawing over what they should make, which I kind of thought might happen, you know, like people couldn't decide which plushie they wanted to pick or what kind of stumped on color scheme or what stuff to use. But in the case of all the people that attended, it was like they really just wanted to make things, and they only had questions more about the technical stuff, like what glue to use or how to put something on. And I didn't have to do a whole lot outside of that. So that was really cool. And we're already planning the next one. So I'm excited to continue doing that. More news from me. I have my first ever t-shirt design up for pre-order right now. So I decided to participate in this kind of like independent production company's contest. So I'm familiar with this company. Their name is Raw Paw. They're based in Texas. I love their name, actually. Raw Paw is such a cute name. But they're based in Texas, and they do, like, screen printing, mostly t-shirt printing stuff, but other printing services for artists. I was introduced to them because an artist that I wanted to order a shirt from was doing pre-orders for her shirt design through them. So they do a lot of small batch shirts and pre-orders, and their whole thing is that they're very strongly in support of artists, strongly anti-AI, and they run these contests where it's like a theme is set by them. They encourage artists to participate within the guidelines, submit a design, and then proceeds from every shirt pre-order that you as the artist sell will then go to you. So of course they take a cut, and then you get a cut, and you retain all the rights to your art. And then the contest aspect is that they give out prizes for, I think, the top three pre-orders or something like that. So I decided to take part in this because I like the idea of, like, having, kind of guidelines. For one, I've never done screen printing before. There's a certain way you have to prepare the file for screen printing. And then if you have a theme guideline, and then you also had color limitations, you can only use two colors, you can only use certain colors, only certain color t-shirts. It's like a very structured way to try out something new like that. So I really enjoyed it, like coming up with the idea and figuring out how to set up the file the way I wanted it, working with screen tones for the first time, because screen printing can't do traditional, like, shading. So all the shading and screen printing is done through screen tones, which are like those little dots. And like, the more close the dots are, the, like, denser the thing looks, and then you can make the dots, like, smaller or further apart, and then it kind of gives you the perception of something fading or having a, gradient or something like that. So for my shirt, I themed it around like vintage computers, vintage computer ads. I actually looked up a font that is, like, very much inspired by those old computer ads that you would see in magazines, probably, like, what you think, the 80s, Marcus? That era,
Yeah,
80s or
probably.
90s. Those ads where it's like just a wall of text about whatever the thing in the ad is. But stuff like that. And the theme was heaven or hell. And so I was thinking about, honestly, thinking about my dad and life and, where do you go after you die and all that kind of stuff. So I have a computer with, like, a, what'd you call it? Like a staticky, like, broken screen, and on the screen is a skull, and then there's text that says, where will you go, above the computer. And so that's the design I came up with. And it's available for pre-order until September 21st, if you would like to grab one. I know I'll be picking up one each for you and me and anyone else in my life that wants one. I think I have to hit 10 pre-orders in order for it to be screen printed. Otherwise, everything will be printed. So it's not like I have to make the 10, but anything under 10 would be digitally printed, which is more the traditional, well, I don't know if the traditional is the right word, but it's more kind of like common mass-produced t-shirt printing method. So it wouldn't use the screen printing, which I'm kind of excited to try out. So I hope I can make 10 pre-orders. So if you're interested, I'll have the link in the description and you can go take a look at the design. As for other events, I've been getting up to, let's see, we did one vintage market that I was excited to take part in because we like the town that it was being held in a lot. There's, like, a really big vintage community there, lots of good stores, like antique malls, all kinds of stuff. And we know the organizers somewhat, and that we know their store. They seem like cool people. And so I was really hyped to do this one. It was inside, my first event inside. But it was, what, it was like a 90-degree day, wasn't it?
It was pretty,
Some
well, it wasn't just hot, it was also quite muggy.
muggy, yeah, it was hot and muggy. And we've had a few weekends recently where they've had, like, the extreme heat warning. And I think that might have even been an extreme heat warning weekend. And so it was
Maybe.
just a miserable day. At least they had the thrifty ice cream truck out front to make it all worth it. But we didn't really know what to expect, and I'd heard good things about the last one, which I believe was in May. We didn't actually attend that one, but everybody that I talked to about this event said May was really busy. So we were hopeful for this one, but unfortunately, maybe due to the heat, maybe also due to the fact that kids are not in town. This is very much, I wouldn't say exclusively a college town, but there is at least one big college
Yeah.
nearby. And so you would normally probably get a lot of college kids, but they might all be off for summer break out of town. And just there weren't a lot of people around. So we barely made back the booth cost. And it was a pretty slow day overall. So that was a bit of a bummer, but I'm thinking I'll try that one again. They have another one in September, and we'll just see how it goes. Some you, like, get the feeling, like, that, oh, this is just, like, organized poorly and I can't see it doing any better. Like, remember that anime one we did earlier in the year? Like, that one was so bad. I was like, I can't even bring myself to do this again. Whereas this one, like, I can see the potential. I think that it's well organized. Like, I love that they gave us such clear instructions for, like, loading in and all that. It's really interesting to see how different events run them. We had another one, actually the one after this, where literally the day before they changed information. Like, I was originally going to be an indoor booth and then they switched me to an outdoor booth. And it's like, well, I mean, luckily I have a tent, but what if I didn't have a tent and you told me I could be inside, you know, all of a sudden I can't be inside. So I'm glad that the other one, the first one, was a little more structured. But yeah, then we did the next one was an outdoor little thing. Well, outdoor for us. There were some people inside at a cafe. That was nice because you didn't have to pay any booth fee. So it was like, well, there's nothing to lose aside from our sanity. Because it was another hot day. Yeah. Another one that we were like, well, would have been great if we were inside. They even sent in their message, like, if you're inside, the second floor is really chilly, so you better bring a jacket. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I want to be inside with the jacket. And they switched us up so we were outside. And that one was really interesting because aside from the kind of wonky organization, it was, like, pretty dead most of the day, except for the very end, where then all of a sudden a lot of stuff started happening and I made fair bit of money. I mean, again, because we didn't have to pay for the booth fee, so it was like anything was good. But in the first half, I would have said, oh, screw this, it really isn't worth it. And by the second half, I was like feeling good about it. I wouldn't necessarily do it again, especially if it were really hot, but I felt positive at the end. So it's funny how things can turn around in basically an hour or two. You know, you can have a really slow start and then the end brings it through. And yeah, speaking of things that you just don't know how they're going to go, I had another market. I think this is my last market, mini market recap for this episode. I had another one. Well, I guess I wouldn't even call it a market. It was more like an event where I was a vendor at. And it was at a, what'd you call it? Like a fabric thrift store. So it was basically a thrift store for fabrics and craft supplies. It was in a new town that we haven't done an event at that's actually pretty far away. And they have like an open mic music night. And they invite vendors to participate for free by having a booth inside their store, more like a table inside the store. And their thing is that they really like people who do some kind of interactive thing at their table. And they liked, I think they saw me through social media and they liked that I do my build a button station where I bring a bunch of different papers and people can build a button pin and then we'll make it with my button machine right there. So they were really into that and I said I'd bring that. And that did really well too. And so that was weird to me because it's like a very small event at a store where you could expect that not a lot of people would come. You're not out on the street where anyone might see it. You kind of have to be familiar with the store and with the community and make a point to go there to check out this event that they have going on. But did really well. Like, it was a good crowd there, and everyone I think that was there was very excited to participate and made some good sales. Some people really went wild with those buttons. It's always fun to see people get excited over like the different papers I have, especially when I have Japanese stuff and people be like, whoa, is that Animal Crossing? Or, you know, even more obscure stuff. Like, one guy found a page from like a Famitsu that I had that had Ratchet and Clank on it, and he cut it out. And I said, oh, you know that character? And he's like, yeah, yeah, it's Clank. And I said, oh, it says Clank in Japanese next to him. He's like, whoa, that's so cool. And he was like so hyped about it. I just loved it. It's always fun to see people getting excited about stuff. So that's why I like the markets and events. Fun interacting with people. I feel like it always, you know, boosts my mood and makes me excited to do it again. On the flip side, like preparing for them, I always have this like imposter syndrome, self-doubt, where I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, it's so much work. And what's the point? And then we go out and I'm like, oh yeah, it's fun. That's the point. Yep. Okay, but that's it for my market talk, small business talk. Marcus, we went to the fair. What did you think of the fair this year? I should specify it's the OC fair here mm-hmm. in Orange County, California.
Yep. Let's see. So we went to the fair, and just because it's kind of a fun little random thing to do when it comes around. And I like it generally. The only thing I don't like, which is probably true of a lot of these types of fairs, is simply that it's quite expensive all, you know, when you're all said and done with it. In order to park, if you're driving yourself, there is a fee. The ticket, of course, is a fee. Although, probably the cheapest thing you'll spend money on is the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, all of the food has a fee, and the food is quite expensive. Now, with that said, the food is kind of one of the main reasons to go to the fair, because it's always where you get wild. You get all kinds of funny, unusual things. And even there, the price, you never are quite sure what you're going to get. We got some pork belly stuff, and it was like very, like, 5 pieces of pork belly or something. But then another thing we got was like basically the same price. And it was like a mountain of fries.
Yeah.
It was so much. So many fries.
We were like, oh, this probably won't be too much, thinking back on the pork belly one we got. But granted, pork belly, I think, is a lot more expensive than fries. But yeah. It was too much. Way too much.
So we didn't even eat all of that.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine. It's, you know, but it was like, wow. It's quite pricey. Probably most meals, if you're getting meals, are going to be at least $20, I would guess. So, you know, it's not a cheap time, but it is unique. You get to look around at the animals, the farm animals that they have. You get to look at people on rides that are really sketchy and scary.
The rides, not the people.
Yeah, the rides. The rides.
Yeah, the rides are scary. Well, the fact that they put them up and take them down every year is scary.
Yeah.
And they look real rickety, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the vibe is fun. It's nice to go around and see everyone having fun and riding the scary rides.
And screaming.
Eating the ridiculous food and playing the midway games and all these things. I find it cute. Kind of. And then there's also other events, like I think we didn't really see it, but there was like, I don't know, a plant contest or something, or maybe a veggie contest. But there's also the parts where they just have like, here are collections that people entered to show off, like of various items, like let's say a Barbie collection or something. They've got a lot of that type of stuff. And it's like funny because you never really know what you're gonna see, because people collect literally anything. And sometimes it's like, oh, I should enter a collection mm-hmm. because I've got so much of X or Y. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, yeah. Is that what you think?
Mm-hmm. They have like baking contests. And then the thing that I think I saw for the first time last year, or noticed for the first time last year, was that they also have a table setting contest.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very fun. I really like it because it's like something I never really thought about before. I understand that, you know, table setting is like a thing and there's like right ways to do it, but I don't know or care to. I don't have all the utensils to be able to do something like that. But these people are fun because they do a table setting themed to something. For example, this year they had a video game theme, I guess, was an option for people to submit table settings themed to games such as The Legend of Zelda or Fallout or Five Nights at Freddy's. And so that was really funny because I didn't expect that at all. So it was like this thing that I'm very unfamiliar with, table setting contests, and then something I'm very familiar with, which is video games. So it was really funny to see the two together. The Five Nights at Freddy's tables were very cool. I like them. They had, you know, kind of mimicking as if you're the character who's like at the booth or whatever, looking at the TVs and monitoring the animatronics type of thing. But also table settings, so like plates and such and cups. So I thought it was fun. I really like those things. It's like I'm never going to see this, a table setting contest, anywhere else in my day-to-day life. So it's really funny to have a moment where I can look at a bunch of these different creative tables and enjoy it that way. The only thing I didn't enjoy is some of the tables, not the video game ones, but other tables used AI art to, like, for no reason, just put a giant backdrop of an image on their table. And I'm like, this is stupid and ugly, and I hate it.
Yeah, or like their menus would have some menus,
yeah. It's just like, this is terrible. I don't like it. They shouldn't have won or been even in here. But I have a feeling that people who do scoring on table setting maybe don't have a real recognition or eye for AI, or maybe even don't care. Because it's not like the whole table is AI, right? It's just like an image on it is, but sometimes when the image is gigantic, it's like, well, I can't stop looking at this horribly detailed forest or whatever that's on here, and it makes me hate this table.
Yeah,
but whatever, you know. But yeah, I think the fair is fun. I like going, you know. Once a year is plenty. They sell like a pass. You can go whenever you want. I don't.
You mean
know.
During the duration?
Yes,
of the fair.
And I can't imagine wanting to go that many times.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe twice, but I can't imagine like I need to have this pass to go a bunch. I don't know. They do have like shows and stuff, so maybe some people get use out of it by seeing the different musicians.
Yeah, because I guess there's the separate area, like the amphitheater, where they sell tickets separately. But then there's also just musicians that play. So yeah, maybe if you want to go see a bunch of different shows.
Yeah.
But I can't understand it.
Yeah. So it was fun. Overall, I enjoyed it. And I think you did too.
I did. It was fun.
Good. So that's my summary. It was
Thank
fun.
You. Yes.
And the rides are scary.
They are, but it's fun to look at them and be like, well,
and
I
be
would.
Like, oh my God.
I would never. Though I did as a kid, at least once, because I remember I got really upset and they had to stop the ride and take me off.
Wow.
Back in Vermont. Yeah. It was one of those big spinny ones, kind of like the rave wave that we were amused by, because there was a half naked Poseidon. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like a mini one of those. And my mom always says that she feels really bad for letting me go on it by myself because she knew that I couldn't handle it, but I really wanted to go. And so she let me go because she didn't want to go on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I chickened out in the end. Yep, that's my fair story. As for other stories, I've got a big saga to regale everyone. Marcus already knows it, but back to the business talk, I've been in the market for a thermal printer, thermal label printer for a little while now. I think they would be handy, like for shipping online orders, especially a lot of people use them to print out like the shipping labels. But also, I don't know if they were always like this, but at least recently you can get ones that can do like cute stickers, basically. Like you could have a purple round label that has something printed on it and you could design whatever you want and have it printed there. Or they also have what they call barcode stickers, but it's just a 1-inch by 2-inch kind of rectangle. And those are also available in fun colors. So I was getting all these ideas of how I could use that with my like packaging and markets, or like a thank you sticker or something, you know, so I don't have to necessarily outsource nicer stickers, fancy stickers than I would normally, you know, pay money to outsource, but then sell them. But these are little freebies or little decorative items, so they can be a little cheaper to make. And most people would just be throwing them away anyway, right? So I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be fun to add this to my repertoire. Did a lot of research on which one I wanted to get. There's a lot of different brands, particularly Dymo is a brand. And then they have some brands from like China. And I saw this one called Mumbin is around a lot. And they seem to be doing a lot of like influencer or social media content creator collabs. And they've got really cute machines because they're like purple. But then with that one, I just wasn't sure, you know, everyone that talks about them, it's like they've had it for a couple months or they just got gifted it. And so I wanted to hear, you know, long-term reviews of people that actually are using them regularly for their business. Like, do they hold up? I worry if I bought something from China, like the customer service would be really hard to deal with. And that is an important point for a moment for my story. So I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, sticking with like a U.S. made item. A U.S. company might be easier, and maybe they have like a long reputation. So after a bunch of research, I settled on the company Rollo, which is well regarded for labels. And, you know, they're used by a lot of business people. And I found rating some folks that have used them for years, used the same machine for years, because they still sell a wired model, and then they made a wireless model. Funnily enough, the wireless model was literally just the old model but wireless, so you can pay to have the wireless functionality, and it's like maybe $100 more. But my thought is, well, I'm just gonna be using it at my computer anyway, so I saved a bit of money and I ordered the wired model. Ordered a few different label types. I really wanted these purple circle stickers, like I was talking about, for, you know, thank you stickers, or to even put my Apricot Sushi Shop logo on and then stick that on like packaging and things. I thought it would be so cute. And on their website, you know, they're like, this model machine can use all these different types of labels. And here we even sell all these labels. So I finally jumped in. I ordered my machine. Got in the mail, set it all up, and then I tested it with the standard shipping labels. That was fine. Tested it with, I bought the pink 2x1 inch barcode label, and I tested with that, and that also worked. It took a little bit of finagling, because you have to actually go in like the printer preferences on your computer and change the settings in there to give different like printing profiles to it. So it's a little bit more finicky than just like plug and, you know, go. But I was able to get that to work. And then the circle labels. So when you put in a new label, you actually open up the machine and you feed in the new label, turn the machine back on, and you push a button, and that's supposed to calibrate the machine. It like does some little dance and figures out the size of the label you've put in so that it is on the right settings. Well, I put these round labels in, and no matter what I did, it would not register them. It would give me this like red blinking light, which means there's an error. So I tried a whole bunch of things, and I tried to research online to see if anyone else had this issue. I could not find anyone ever talking about the round labels with this machine, and I thought, oh no, like, maybe they claim that they work, but they don't really. But the Rollo company sells these labels, and so it didn't make any sense. So I contacted their customer support and told them what the issue was. And they actually scheduled a call with me. So I got on a phone call with a Rollo representative, and they like walked me through the troubleshooting. And they had me set up my phone with like some kind of software where they could record what my camera was seeing. So basically they could record me going through the troubleshooting with them and showing them me doing all the things they were asking me to do with my printer. So we went through all that, and the guy on the line kept being like, oh yeah, sounds like it's really jammed. I'm like, it's not jammed, like I can show you. And it reads all the other labels, but for some reason it won't read this one. And for whatever reason, got to the end of all that, and he was like, well, no, it's not working. And so he had to then escalate that to his superiors. And then his superiors got back after like a day and they were like, okay, here's some more things you can do. Let us know if this fixes it. So I did all the things they asked me to do. None of it fixed it. And then finally, they said, okay, we'll send you a new roll of labels to try. And then that didn't work. And then they said they would send me a replacement. But to send the replacement, I had to send my model back to them. So then packaged up the model, sent it back, then waited and waited. Finally, they sent me a new one. And I just got the new one, I think, on Thursday when we were at the fair. And I was convinced that it wasn't going to work because I tried everything on this other machine. It never worked. And I don't really understand why, you know, the machine would have this problem with one set of labels, but all the others would be okay. I was like convinced it's a problem with their machines. But I got the new machine and it works. So I'm very happy to now have a working label maker. And maybe I'll make some labels. I mean, I better now. Right. Yeah, so that was quite the saga. I don't think I've ever had that much of a tech issue with something where it was like, you know, a big thing I purchased not working the way it was supposed to and having to go through all that rigmarole. But credit to them, I liked that they, every step of the way, they had a human respond to me. They talked to me directly and like listened to my questions and seemed to like actually address what I was saying. Versus having some like canned response or something. And they were very quick to respond, even though the longest thing was I had to ship the unit back to them. And then they had to wait for their warehouse to confirm that they'd received it and this and that. And that took a little while, but they were very helpful. Unlike another company, I will not name them, but they do screen protectors for iPad. And they're like the type that give you like the paper-like feeling, not paper-like TM or whatever. There is a company that creates those screen protectors called Paper-like, but it's not them. Different company that does the type of thing. And I was having an issue with my screen protector that I owned, and it was scratching. And I thought maybe there was something wrong with my nib on my pencil because it never scratched before. So I wanted to ask them, you know, do you recommend purchasing a new one? Is this a common issue? You know, I just was kind of curious because I don't really like having to fully replace something that isn't that old. Granted, it was a year and a half old, so I could understand that maybe it's like, oh, with pretty regular wear, we expect that this will happen, you know, eventually. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting into my like Karen era and just
no.
Okay, thank you. But I just wanted to know. So I messaged them or emailed them and, you know, said, is this an issue with the nib? Well, I thought maybe I could replace just the nib and it wouldn't continue to be an issue rather than replacing all of it. So I asked them. I got an AI email response and the AI said, since you bought this in December 2024, that means you're still within the 6-month replacement warranty period. So we'll give you a new one. So it is now August 2026. I purchased this in December 2024. So I was like, AI, this is the future. We can calculate 6 months warranties, no problem. So then I asked to talk to a person. And finally got through to a person and they would not give me a replacement one because it was not within the warranty period. So that's a negative customer service experience I had, but I'm glad that Rollo does not have. So I wanted to shout out Rollo for fixing my issue and not using AI. So that's my long tech story. As for our tiny little tidbit of news... We watched the hot trailer that everyone's talking about. It's called Wicker, is the film. This trailer dropped maybe a week ago. And it's got Alexander Skarsgård and Olivia Colman. And it's a kind of like period piece about a fisherman woman in this kind of farmer town who wants a husband. And she asks someone who maybe is the local shaman or something. I don't really know. They don't give us the lore in the trailer, but she asks someone to make her a husband or give her a husband, and he makes her a husband out of wicker. And it looks like it's going to be a comedy because there's a lot of sex jokes and sexy times and people joking about his big wicker schlong and things like that. But I love Alexander Skarsgård, so I'll probably watch anything he would be in. I watched the Tarzan remake he was in. That was horrible. So I'm eagerly anticipating this. I don't know. I just like a fun, silly movie, and I think it looks fun and silly. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. It'll be fine.
I prefer, not comedy. I prefer it's when it's more weird. Like inanimate object, like pin.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, so these type of things can go two ways, like really just comedy funny or weird. I think it would be fun if maybe not horror, but like, yeah, like kind of sort of creepy, like we don't, yeah, weird, creepy, and also more subtle humor.
Yeah.
You can have like humor, but this, like, the trailer is literally cutting to, like, the bed shaking every couple of seconds, you know, to show, oh, yeah, they're really having a lot of sex. And then cutting to the ladies in the village with their eyes, you know, wide because the wicker guy is horny or whatever. And it's like, okay, we get it, you know. But it does kind of seem like, you know, somebody's fan fiction they made into a movie, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they should do a pin remake.
Yeah, they should.
There you go.
Starring Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah, oh my god. As who?
Pin.
As Pin. So Pin would just be him sitting there the whole time. That could be pretty funny. That'd be a hard role for him.
Yeah.
Just sit there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all the news we're going to talk about today. We've got a lot of playing and watching to discuss, so we'll get right into it. We've really been on a gaming kick lately.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what prompted it aside from, you know, we've been puttering around with the PlayStation Portal and the streaming and talked a bunch of times about playing Devil May Cry. And then I think it was like one evening, we're like, what are we going to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? And I was like, you know what? Fine. We're going to play video games. So we booted up Devil May Cry 1.
The PS2 one.
Well, no. It was the HD remake.
Well, I'm just trying to say it's not like...
Well, I would call it DMC.
I guess so.
It's okay. DMC, Marcus. Okay. Yeah, not the one with the anime Dante. Not the Western Dante one, the original OG. But yeah, we were playing the HD collection, I guess, originally for PS3. That's part of the PS Plus streaming situation. So that's cool. I really like that we can just do that and you don't have to download it. We're streaming it and we have good enough internet to do that. Except for one time when we were playing, I noticed it got laggy. In fact, the game, like, this was actually DMC 2, spoiler, we played that as well. But, yeah, when we were playing that, there was a little bit of funky stuff with our internet. But otherwise, we played through one without any problems.
Mm-hmm.
So one, you said you had played a little bit of before?
I think so, but I don't really remember. Like, maybe as a rental or something.
Okay, well, what did you think of it looking at it now?
It's fine. I think it's surprising how simple it is. Because I feel like in the past, playing this for maybe 3, I felt like there was more going on.
You mean in terms of like combat gameplay? Okay.
It's very simple, you know, there's not much. It's not a very big world. It's not.
Well, that's for sure.
A lot of enemy types. Backtracking. It's not a lot of anything. But it's fun. I think it's funny because, you know, knowing how it has its origins and as if it could have been another Resident Evil game, you can feel some of that Resident Evilness in it from the, you know, the camera.
Mm-hmm.
To
kinda like the spooky castle mansion vibes, like the set pieces.
And the kind of, they're not very hard puzzles at all, but like the quote puzzles that there are, it feels Resident Evil-y. You know, there's like a statue and there's like a weird diamond or orb or something that you have to find to put it into the slot. And then something happens and it's like, feels very Resident Evil-ish. But then it's completely not, because Dante is this, you know, action character who is fighting enemies often. And at least on easy mode, they're not that hard.
Yeah, but you did have to play, I think it's like the first level at least, to get easy mode to unlock. And I remember you pass it on to me.
Yes.
And we both thought it was harder than we expected. Now that like we played it, I remember I did have problems and I had to switch to easy mode when I played it back in the day, but I totally forgot about it. And it's tough. Like, it's literally the first batch of enemies you're having trouble with. At least we were.
Yeah.
But once you're on easy, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, and once you're on easy, it flows in the way that I remember, which is where it seems like you can very easily string combos and beat up on enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more enjoyable to me. Mm-hmm. So I like that mode.
Yeah, easy automatic, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so we played through that. It's not really that long.
No.
Well, like 6 hours.
6 hours or something.
Then 23 missions or something like that.
Yep. Oh, that was another thing that I didn't understand, why the missions were so weird, like that they're not like all similar in length.
Yeah, they were very unbalanced.
Some missions were over 10 minutes and some missions were like, open a door. Damn, did that end?
Yeah.
2 minutes. It's like, what?
Yeah. That was funny. And it would be funny because I'd like do a mission that was really easy and then you'd have to do a mission and it'd be really hard. And you'd be like, hey.
Yeah. So that was a little weird. Mm-hmm. The inconsistencies and the different mission lengths. But, you know, it was quick and relatively painless and fun to play. So, you know, I enjoyed it.
Good. Me too. Which is why after we played that, we were like, hey, we could try two. And then everybody says two is horrible, but it can't be that bad, right? Or can it?
Well, I remember people saying they didn't, at the time, disliking the game. I may have also briefly rented it at some point back in the day, but I really don't remember.
Okay.
So this was basically my first time playing it. And, you know, right on the heels of DMC1. So, you know, it was very similar in some regards, but then it also feels like not polished, because it's just kind of off.
Like, the fact that you can just shoot like forever at enemies and eventually kill them and not have to do anything else.
Like, for example, I kind of tested this by standing and shooting with one hand while my other hand was on my phone, using my phone, so not paying attention to the game at all. And the enemies would just kind of jump around, not hit me, just jump around, and I would keep shooting them until they finally died. And I'm like, well, that doesn't seem right. Or another enemy where if I just walked up right next to it, it couldn't hit me, and I could just hit it until it died. And I was like, you know, this doesn't feel finished. It doesn't feel like they took time and care into this game. And so it's annoying and also just kind of weird. Dante has like way more abilities now, but also you like don't unlock them. He just has them. So you can do all kinds of things. But I don't know if that's like appealing. I think it's kind of cool when you unlock different abilities in a game. So to have them all there at the start is like overwhelming. And also like, you don't know.
Do you think everything. That was because we were on easy or no?
I don't think so. I don't know if the game's structure would change. The only thing you could buy was like increased power for your weapons.
Yeah. That's so weird. And then they changed the setting from this kind of cool gothic castle to
the modern day city.
Like, you do start, I think the very first town is like in Europe, kind of a rundown town. But then the big villain is the CEO of a company. So then you're in the city, and like the way they throw different bosses and enemies at you makes no sense. And there's no introduction to them or anything. It's just like poof, now you're fighting this big snake booby monster. And now you're fighting this big chimp. And oh, he's back again. And now you're climbing a building being chased by an infected helicopter.
Yes.
Yeah. So that one you gave up on. Or you're like, this isn't really any fun.
It's not
So
fun, no.
yeah. So odd. I don't know. Was it just like, the first game did really well, so they're like, shit, we gotta do another one. And then they did it way too fast, or I have no idea how it ended up like that.
I don't know.
But
And also, like, maybe, and I we didn't finish the game, so who knows? But Trish, like, where is Trish? Where did she go?
it was a new
Now there's this other
lady.
lady.
Yep. Very odd.
Yeah.
So at some point you want to play DMC3, but we're going to take a little break from that, or
Probably, but I do remember really liking
yeah, me
3.
too. I'm pretty sure. Well, I think I beat 3.
I think I did as well.
Yeah. So I guess they fixed the issues with 2 for
Yeah, 'cause
3.
I think a lot of people like 3.
Yeah. Okay, so we played Devil May Cry, and then you fiddled around with some other games on the streaming. Did you want to talk about any of those, like the Power Rangers one that wasn't that great? What was that
I
called? Read
mean
or Rewind or something?
retro rewind
Oh,
maybe.
okay.
I don't really know. I thought it looked cute when I remember like seeing it announced or something before. And because there's been a lot of these kind of modern games done with a retro styling coming out. I think some are better than others. Like the Rugrats one is not very good either. But this one, yeah, it looks really good. It looks really cute. Bright colors, all this. But playing it just wasn't that interesting. From what I've seen, all the Rangers have like the same skill set, so there's nothing unique about the different Rangers aside from their look, their visual, appearance. And also, it just didn't feel that fun like playing it. It's got a good, visual design, but like the gameplay design is kind of lacking. So it's just like, eh, this isn't fun. I'm not gonna waste my time with it. And I played some Ape Escape for PS1. And that is a game I've like dabbled with every once in a while in my life. Like I'm like, oh, Ape Escape. Let me try that. And then I stop playing. So this is probably the most I've played it in like one sitting. I will not continue, I don't think, because it's kind of hard. It's like a weird control scheme. And so it's like you have your different things, like a little bat or whatever you have in a net, and you can jump and chase the monkeys all around, and it's just kind of hard for me to like wrap my brain around hitting them and then swapping to the other weapon and then netting them. I don't know, something about it I can't do very well when you need to do it kind of quickly because they'll get up and run away again. So if the mechanic were like easier for my brain to do and like my hands to carry out, then maybe I would play it more. But like as is, it's just like I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing every time I have to attack one. So from that regard, it's like too much effort for me to play. But it is cute. It's kind of funny. I like the aesthetic. I like the music. But yeah, it's gameplay wise, it's not for me. Yeah.
That's okay. Not everything has to be for you. I didn't play it, I just watched, but I'll take your word for it. Then I picked up a couple games just to try out. They had Farming Simulator, I guess 25 or 2025 on there. And I've always been curious, like, what those games are like. And I'll say, from the limited amount I played in the tutorial, they seem really intense. They're like, we're going to show you how to use all the different tractors and machinery, and you got to plant everything in a straight row, and then, you know, you got to do everything in just the right order. Like, it's definitely no Story of Seasons. That's for sure. This is my push a button to collect everything. So, you know, I guess that makes sense. It's for people that really want the full immersion of like a simulator where you're doing all the mundane tasks of farming. I could see it being fun. It was very nice. Like, the graphics were nice. And it was cool to kind of pick like what location you want your farm in and have that walking around on the farm. Though it's a little scary how your grandpa is there like teaching you the ropes. And if you, I don't know, say accidentally run into him or purposefully try to run him over, he's just like a metal pole in the middle of the world. And he also teleports around. So like he was starts at the house and he says hi. And he's like, go meet me at the field. And you just drive over the field and then he's like, poof, he's there. And so that was very funny for some reason. Like he's teleporting around. But I don't know that I would play more of it, but it was fun to fiddle around with. And it definitely, you know, when there's no cost involved, it's like, why not try it out? I also decided to try out Elder Scrolls Oblivion because I've never played an Elder Scrolls game. And that was there. And I don't know. I thought, why not give it a shot? I'm not really a big, like, Western RPG type person. I guess, are a lot of these games, like, based on, like, D&D and things? That's the feeling I get.
I think to some extent.
Yeah. So, or, I mean, at least the Baldur's Gate games are, right? And then that kind of stuff. Whatever, the company that did the new Baldur's Gate game, the one they were famous for before that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all that style. And yeah, just like a lot of choices, a lot of, you know, classes, all these different things to deal with, like making sure you're not over encumbered. I learned very quickly I can't pick up every skeleton bone that I find in the cavern, which, like, why not? Come on. Or at the very least, you know, I guess it's because it's supposed to be realistic, but I would rather have just like an inventory where it's like, okay, you can carry 50 items. And then once you hit 50 items, like your slots are full, then it makes sense. And I'm like, okay, I'll drop these things. But when each item has a different weight to it and all this stuff, it's like, oh, that's just a lot to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, but what if I want this sword? What do I want this sword or do I want this sword? You know? But it seems like it could be fun. It's like something kind of quaint about playing an older game that really looks a bit jank, and I think even at the time people made fun of how it looked, didn't they? Like the faces and everything look real weird.
Think people thought that the characters were relatively ugly back then. I could be wrong.
I mean, like the cat person is very weird looking, which that's who I picked, by the way, but I don't know. Like the cat person, all the human faces. I think the wizard was like all right. They seem fine. But yeah, a lot of them just really weird choices with the how they look. So it's interesting. I might play a bit more, but I don't think I would ever try to beat it or anything, you know, or play it long term. It's just more something to dabble in and be like, oh, so this is what people are talking about when they talk about Elder Scrolls. And as for things we've been watching, we got a whole lot of movies. Firstly, and most importantly, the one that inspired our intro for today, Onsen Shaku, aka Onsen Shark, or as they say in Japanese, other Japanese,
Onsen Same.
Onsen Same. So I taught Marcus Same, which is the Japanese word for shark, but they also say Shaku, which is the title of the movie, Onsen Shaku. Though, you know, we keep calling it that, but that's not actually the official English name. It's like bathhouse shark or something. Hot spring shark. Yeah, you're right. I think onsen, like they could just call it onsen shark. Anyway, this was a was this Tubi? Some Tubi browsing?
I actually think it was on Canopy.
Oh no, you're right. You're right. Canopy browsing, and I came up, and we thought this looks silly, so we watched it, and it was silly, but like a really good, fun kind of silly, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but also extremely stupid.
Yes. Yes.
Very stupid. But yeah, so it's basically about this hot springs centric town in Japan, and they're building like a brand new like skyscraper onsen. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But like for some reason, I don't remember why, but like that makes the sharks come.
Yeah, because the way they're digging into the earth, they've, you know, awakened the these prehistoric sharks that have live under the earth in the onsen or the water system or something. I mean, it's all bogus.
Yes, it's definitely bogus. It becomes increasingly bogus. But anyway, it disrupted these ancient sharks, and so they're back. And what they are doing is killing people who are going into onsens in this town. And the first part that doesn't make any sense is that somehow they give a reason why the sharks are able to become really small or like boneless and go through small tubes.
Yes, because of all their cartilage.
Oh, yeah,
of course.
They're just cartilage, so they can
squish down.
Squish into pipes, water pipes, and get into the onsens and kill people. And then leave. And then also, they can spawn like water on the ground basically anywhere they want.
Yeah, so that one's pretty bogus.
So they can kill you.
Anywhere, not even just in the onsen.
Yes. So, you know, the story is about how people try to stop the sharks. The killer sharks in the onsen.
Yep.
Yes. And it's dumb. And it's very funny and also very weird.
Yes.
Like, every time you see a shark, it's, like, rendered in a different way. Sometimes it's a 3D graphic shark. Sometimes it's, like, a weird, nasty puppet. I don't even know. Like, the shark designs always change.
Yeah.
And it's funny to see because you're like, oh, my God, what's he going to look like now? Because you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. And some of them are very funny. Also, the shark, like, makes sounds.
Yeah, they go, shark. It's very funny.
And yes, it's very strange, but it's fun. And there's also going to be a sequel or a new movie coming out.
Yes.
So that shows there is still an interest in this type of thing. And so I'm glad because it was stupid, but it was, you know, enjoyable. Enjoyable popcorn silly time, basically.
Yes. I feel like it gave a sense, even watching it with no knowledge about it, that people cared about making it and it was like dumb, but in an endearing way. And then after we finished watching it, we kind of Googled it a bit and it turns out that it was
crowdfunded.
Yeah, crowdfunded. So it wasn't Kickstarter, but something. So it was crowdfunded. And we noticed that there was like some kind of real special effects, like, you know, the little miniatures that we would see sometimes in some scenes.
Yeah, so like not CG, it's practical.
Yeah,
it's called practical effects.
Yeah, there we go, practical effects. That was looking at the crowdfunding campaign, and I guess they got people who have worked on tokusatsu before, so they're like tokusatsu effects specifically, from kind of that kind of stuff. And I think that's why some of the sharks looked like real, because they were practical effects, while some were CG for sure. And they, I believe, came out and said that they would be focusing on doing even more practical effects in the second one because people really want that. So it seems like there's, you know, just a love for kind of dorky stuff in this practical genre of film and TV shows, and I just really like that about it. So it's very fun. If you want to watch a dumb movie, you could do much worse than Onsen Shaku. And then the other thing we watched was In the Mouth of Madness. This one was because Sam Neill passed away recently, and it was mentioned somewhere in a list that I read, you know, of Sam Neill's best films. And that was funny because we popped on Tubi, and then you were like, hey, Ann, you literally just mentioned In the Mouth of Madness, and here it is on Tubi. And it's probably because everyone's featuring Sam Neill films, yes, because he, yes, passed away. But I said, well, that's a sign. We have to watch it. So this is based on a Lovecraft story.
Probably.
Or inspired by. I don't know if it's directly related to a specific story. But it's like about this investigator played by Sam Neill is approached because an author has gone missing. And his new horror book, which is like taking the world by storm, the series is taking the world by storm, and his next book is supposed to come out soon, and they need the like draft, but they can't find him, something like that. Mm-hmm. So Sam Neill goes with the editor to try to find this author, and then weird stuff is happening because people who have read the books in the series basically start committing horrific crimes. And then people start seeing things. So Sam Neill, I don't remember his character's name, but he starts reading the books. And then he starts seeing weird things, like grotesque stuff and bad things happening. And so it's kind of this melding of the world of the fiction and the real world. And I thought it was a fun and interesting film. One of those, at the end, everything's kind of a downer. But, you know, in a fine kind of way, because it's not actually relatable. It's not like a bummer, yeah, in that you're like, oh, this sucks for me personally. It's just like, oh, it sucks for Sam Neill, but, you know, it's just a movie. So I'd recommend that one, too.
Okay, so we also watched a documentary that I got from Vinegar Syndrome like a while back. And the documentary is called Forbidden Love, The Unashamed Stories of Lesbian Lives. And it basically talks to a few different lesbians who were alive in like the 50s era, and talking about kind of basically their lives at the time. It ties in a little bit also with like lesbian pulp fiction that was also happening during this time frame, where not only is like the whole thing framed around it like visually, it's also there are interspersed between the like interviews with the women, there are like segments that are little scenes as it like kind of examples of what you might see in a lesbian pulp novel, of these women meeting and, you know, what happens in their relationship. I'm not 100% sure why they framed it that way, since they don't talk about the books too much, but they do talk about them a little bit. So it kind of just like adds something more to the documentary. You know, they interview one of the writers of these novels. So, you know, that was certainly cool. Even though I don't think she herself was a lesbian. But still,
I think she realized later in life, I believe, okay, they said, and that, yeah. But when she was writing them, she was married to a man and, yeah, living that way.
But either way, it was a neat documentary. I always enjoy documentaries about kind of gay life in the past, from a sense of just kind of learning more about it all. It's important to have these types of histories available, because obviously these people won't be around forever. And then what happens? You don't have the history because, you know, it wasn't mainstream. So it wasn't easily covered or, you know, searchable in other media or texts. You know, it's not as obvious if you want to look back without these kind of first party, these sources of like the actual folks who were living these lives and what they were doing. So I always enjoy documentaries featuring, you know, people who talk about things that were underground or secret or illegal or whatever, that they were existing and how they existed And, you know, it's nice to see that for them, you know, they're doing well now, or at the time of this documentary, which was
90s, I think.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
So that's good. But yeah, it was just cool. I did like it. A lot of times, documentaries about queer things do not focus exclusively on lesbians. Usually it's, you know, a lot of gay men, and then sometimes there might be lesbians as well.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's not fully, fully focused on lesbian women. So that was nice, refreshing to see. So I enjoyed it a lot. I am keeping that one.
Mm-hmm.
I am not getting rid of it. Like so many other Vinegar Syndrome things that I purchased. So
uh-huh.
That's good. Let's see. We watched another documentary. Well, me more than you.
Yeah, you caught mostly
a little tidbit of it.
I don't.
I was scrolling on Tubi a bit, as I'm wont to do,
mm-hmm.
and saw a documentary called Vampira and Me. So I decided to watch that because I don't know a lot about, I guess it's Vampira.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about her except that the character exists in Plan 9 from Outer Space, and also that Elvira came from Vampira as like a concept. They're very similar. So that's, I didn't know that much, so I wanted to learn more, and so I watched the documentary. So if you're into things like about horror hosts, horror television show hosts or whatever, this is a good watch because it delves into a lot about how she got started doing this role on ABC and how, despite the show being just regionally aired in California, that it became known much wider than that. And so, like, seeing something like that take place was rare for a show like that at the time. So it's cool. Learning a bit in something that's probably so obvious, but that I never thought about, is like, why do horror hosts often just show garbage movies? Because they couldn't afford to get good movies.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, but I've never thought about it. And then it's become like a fun, like culturally fun thing. It's like, these shows are often about shitty movies, and it's like fun, and the host makes fun of the movie, and you make fun of the movie with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like so common now. But I didn't realize that maybe it began because it was cheaper
mm-hmm.
than trying to get a real classic horror movie. So that was an interesting little random tidbit for me. But yeah, it was just a nice documentary. I liked learning more. I didn't realize when I watched it, but, you know, they talk about that a lot. There's like very little footage of the Vampira show available because, you know, in the 50s, it's not like you had a VCR. You weren't taping it for your own use. It wasn't replayed in, you know, later years. So basically a lot of the content, the footage that the studios had was probably destroyed or, you know, replaced with other media. So there's very little of it left. I didn't actually think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm spoiled with things these days where you can get like Elvira host shows maybe on video. And things like that. So I was like, oh yeah, this is old,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? I forgot. But yeah, I thought it was neat. I would recommend it if anyone is like interested in learning more about Vampira as like a proto Elvira. It's pretty interesting how like she is so similar, or how Elvira is so similar to her, I guess, with the mix of comedy and sexuality and horror. So I thought that was neat. Yeah, so I liked it.
Yeah, it seemed cool from the little bits I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And that is interesting. I didn't know that really either, though it makes sense that they wouldn't have saved it which is mm-hmm. a shame.
Yeah.
And then finally, our most recent watch, literally just before we recorded this, mm-hmm. we watched Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Yeah.
And this came up because I made a comment like, how come giantesses and like giant women destroying cities and all that is like a theme within cultural, but there or culture, but there's never giant men in mainstream culture. We're not talking about, you know, these interesting communities on the internet or something, but you know, of course, starting with the Attack of the 50-Foot Woman and then like sci-fi pulpy stuff, there's often like giant women, right?
Yeah.
So I guess you can trace it back to this film, but I still think it's interesting, like, why women? I guess maybe it's like a power fantasy. At least in this movie, it was a bit, because she was maligned and then she kind of got her revenge, even though yeah. it was sad in the end. But mm-hmm. so this was from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspected before we even watched it that it was like a normal woman that somehow became large rather than like an alien woman comes yeah. to Earth. But I didn't realize that she has like an encounter with aliens or an alien man in this case.
Yeah.
And that somehow makes her giant later on in the film.
Yes.
There's a lot of preamble, especially for a movie that's only like, what, an hour and 5 minutes?
Yes.
Very short film. And 3/4 of it is all the stuff leading up to her getting giant. And there's very little actual giant action. And then she isn't destroying any cities like I'm led to believe. She literally just like walks into town just to get her crappy husband.
Yeah.
And then she gets him and then she's like, peace out, and leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. Well, she gets revenge by killing the woman that he's cheating on her with, but
mm-hmm.
yeah. And what did you think? Any thoughts?
I wish there was more attacking.
Yes. Not much attacking.
Yeah, also, it's like, is she 50 feet? Because she doesn't look that tall.
Yeah, especially when she walked up to the building, which is like a single-story pub or hangout, right, in town. She was not that much bigger than it. But yet when she stood next to like a power line, she was as big as the power line. Yeah, that doesn't
those are
make
big.
Any sense.
Those are very big.
So I think they've got their scales all messed up.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wish there was more attacking. That's what I want.
Yeah, more
attacking.
I was
hoping for.
I was hoping for like Godzilla smashing through yeah. a city type of thing.
Yeah, no, she didn't really do that much damage.
No, no. She didn't damage that many buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, she just gets electrocuted by a power line and dies. So that's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, iconic, right? So now we can say we've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There are certainly many parodies from it.
Yes. And with that, I think we've reached the end of episode 130 of Pixel Pixel. Thank you so much for listening, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.